This is Once for All, where Jude 3 says, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. Listen in as the faith held by believers of all times is now delivered to you.
A truth we ought to consider. Christians think. Christians are thinking people who consider the world around them, consider the headlines in the news, consider the movies, the TV shows that they're watching, and they consider what it is that the person is saying, what is backdrop, is the worldview that's behind the information they're getting. And Christians are able to analyze what is it that the Bible would say about this thing that I'm being told. And that's a new endeavor we're doing here today on Once for All, starting a new series here on Once for All. This is a two-sided series. I am bringing today to various headlines the religious aspect. We have a new, whom I'm calling the Once for All political correspondent, Jeff Smith. Jeff, welcome to Once for All.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Jeff is bringing the political perspective on all of these things and giving us a way to think of these things in a political sphere. And hopefully I can bring the way to think about these things from a religious Christian perspective. And I think it's going to be able to complement one another quite well and help us to understand the world. We are also starting kind of a new thing on Fridays where we open up the phone lines to talk about whatever you want to talk about, kind of an open line Friday. So if you want to chime in on the topics that we're discussing, or if you want to come out of left field and bring something that we haven't discussed yet, you can do that on Once for All. And the toll-free number to do that, no matter where you're listening, is 1-844-51-FAITH, 1-844-51-FAITH. You can also send me an email. I get those emails right here in the studio, deliveredonceforall@gmail.com. deliveredonceforall@gmail.com is the email address. And as a special offer to our Oregon listeners, anyone who calls in with a comment or question during today's broadcast gets two free movie tickets to the movie Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World. That's playing in Grants Pass on March 16th. And that is, for more information on that, go to faithrogueriver.org. But two free movie tickets to Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World, for anyone who calls in during today's broadcast. Again, that number, 1-844-51-FAITH. Well, today, as a foil for what we're talking about today, Jeff, we saw Nancy Pelosi in a town hall meeting hosted by CNN, and we're going to go through some of these clips and see what it is that she's saying and what we can learn about them. But as you watched at least portions of the town hall meeting, what was your initial impression?
Well, because it was CNN that hosted it, they were not that they didn't let the questioners go, because they did. In fact, the one fellow they let go quite a long ways before he got to his question. But I guess it was her town hall, so it was whatever she wanted it to be. But they pretty much were content with her answers. And some of her answers were not only not answering the question, but they were a little bit rambling and hard to listen to. I really didn't know where she was going with some of the answers. So from that perspective, I thought, well, it was a little bit friendly to her, but again, it was her town hall. But it did give us some pretty stark differences between the two sides on some of these issues we're going to talk about.
I thought it was pretty timely. I mean, this is kind of an important time for someone like Nancy Pelosi to get some information out, because the media has been centered on Donald Trump ever since, well, before his inauguration, really. And everybody's thinking about all the things that Trump is putting forward. And she was thinking we need to have another perspective, another voice coming in, particularly the leftist side perspective, to be offered in conjunction with everything Donald Trump is saying.
Yeah, and I think she wanted to show some leadership, too, because in the voting in the Congress for the minority leader position, she didn't get as many votes as she has in the past. And I think she wanted to get herself out front and show herself as a strong leader. And I think it was a smart move on her part. although I think some of her questions may have backfired on her, I do think it was doing the town hall was probably a good move, you know, for the most part for her.
Sure. Well, we have various people come up and ask questions of Nancy Pelosi. The first one is a vet from, I should say, a doctor veterinary. Vet is too vague. From Texas, and he talks about the struggles of living near a border and the border patrol that takes place, the security, the dangers that have been brought about into his community. And then finally, he asked a question, are you, Nancy Pelosi, and your fellow Democrats going to support Donald Trump in a building of a wall or a fence?
Will you and your Democrat colleagues support President Trump in building the wall or fence, shutting down the sanctuary cities, and giving more manpower to the Border Patrol? Give us more Border Patrol agents. We need at least another 1,000 more in the Rio Grande Valley sector, and we need at least another 1,000 more in the Laredo sector. That's my question.
Thank you, Dr. Vickers.
Yes.
Thank you so much for the sensitive presentation that you made about the experience that you have there. The question is not about, do we need to protect our borders? Of course we do. Is it effective to build a wall to the tune of tens, could be $40 billion? And you know, and I know, that the Mexican government is not going to pay for that. So where does that come from? But even if it costs 10 cents, is it an answer? Does it produce the result that you need to see and that we as Americans need to do to protect our borders? A lot of the thinking is we need more technology, we need more manpower, some fencing, perhaps we have some, it's not overwhelmingly effective, but with more technology and more manpower, I think we have a better result than with thinking that Mexico is going to pay tens of billions of dollars to build a wall. And there's no, you know, they're not saying where this money comes from in terms of our budget. So that it comes as come out of more Border Patrol? Where does this money come from? But I will then go to your next question. And again, I appreciate your sensitivity to the loss of life that you have seen, the threat to security that you are experiencing, and your experience is important for us to hear, and I thank you for sharing it. As far as sanctuary cities is concerned, our city of San Francisco is a sanctuary city, and we see it as a place where it makes us safer. It makes us safer because people can go to school, they can get driver's license, they can be witnesses against other violence that they see in the community. Whereas they came forward to profess that, they'd have to be taken up by ICE. And we don't think that we should make our police officers immigration officers. So we think that the sanctuary city makes us safer in our experience.
That's Nancy Pelosi in a recent town hall meeting hosted by CNN. Jeff, I'm going to give you first swing at this. So what do you think about the words of Nancy Pelosi in regards to building a wall as Donald Trump has proposed?
Well, I'll give her credit on the first thing she said. Mexico's not going to pay for the wall, not directly and really not indirectly. This is one thing that some of the diehard Trump people are, you know, all excited about, and they're going to be upset when they find out that even if he puts a tariff on their goods, let's say, that are coming into our country, that's not Mexico paying for the wall. Much the way a corporation doesn't really pay taxes, they pass it on to their customers, we're going to pay the cost. But having said that, I'm okay with that. I want the wall. I'm willing to pay for it. There's already a law, excuse me, there's already a law in place that says build the wall. They just haven't funded it completely. But her point was right. Mexico's not going to pay for the wall. But when she got into the details of the wall, we should do more high-tech things, and we should do, somebody tell that to Israel. Israel has a wall, and it's been more effective than even I think they thought it would be. Of course, technology goes with that. You can't monitor thousands of miles of border even if there's a wall, with just the wall. You need other technologies. And, of course, we know the Mexicans are pretty adept at digging tunnels.
Yeah, so we could fly drones, but it's not going to stop anyone from actually crossing the border.
Right. And, well, unless we fly them the way Obama flew them and, you know, we just bomb people indiscriminately with our drones. But that's another subject. But and then she got into the sanctuary city thing, and I don't know if we want to get into that too much. But her defense of San Francisco being a sanctuary city, frankly, is insulting to most people's intelligence. First of all, nobody's asking the cops to be ICE agents, but we are asking law enforcement, when they apprehend somebody, to notify the federal government that, hey, this is an illegal, they've committed a crime, you know, then let the federal government decide what they want to do. But this idea that we're asking them to be ICE agents, and the idea that it's making their city safer, harboring people you know nothing about, it doesn't necessarily make it more dangerous, but it doesn't make it any safer. That's a kind of a ridiculous statement. Nobody's out there hunting down, you know, illegal immigrants that can hide in the sanctuary city. So that was kind of a ridiculous statement. So, I mean, nothing too egregious on either side of her argument. I just don't think it's a very strong one. The other thing is, we didn't play the first part of that clip. It's fairly graphic, where he's the fellow is describing some of the horrific things happening in these border towns and at the border. And she was very dismissive of that whole thing. I mean, she gave it a little bit of quick lip service, and that was it. And that was a little concerning to me. That probably concerned me more than her answers on everything else. Mm-hmm. Was she was pretty dismissive of the disgusting amount of violence and the level of violence on in some of these border towns.
Yeah, and he was very graphic, told story after story after story of things that have happened, and was cut out here just for the sake of time, not necessarily for the sake of trying to avoid the graphic detail, but is actually something that was good for viewers to hear. What exactly those who are living next to the border are dealing with. You know, he talked about coming home and finding the dogs playing with a decapitated head. You know, think about that, what that'd be like to come home and see. And those are maybe the struggles that we don't see in the various places that we live, lest we're, you know, by the border. So that was something. You know, from a Christian worldview perspective, this is a difficult topic, to be honest, because you know, where does the Bible talk about, you know, how we are to treat immigration, you know, and it really doesn't. I heard recently someone tried to refer, you know, make the connection to Nehemiah, who's building a wall at the reconstruction of the temple after Babylonian captivity. I'm not sure that's the same thing. I think that's something else going on. But I think we can say this. First of all, we have to remember that what we're dealing with here are human beings. And so we need to treat immigrants as our neighbor in a loving way, just as we would anyone else. But with that, we also, in a biblical worldview, are given to realize that our government is instituted for the sake of keeping us safe. And so we need to address this issue in a legal fashion as well. And if we neglect the legal fashion in which we're to address things like immigration, then we're actually not showing forth love to our neighbor, because to say we're going to ignore our government, the legal process that has been given to bring people in as citizens, we're now hurting our American neighbor by reducing economic opportunity, by possibly even endangering them in one way or another. So I think that there's two aspects of this. What does it mean to love my neighbor, even my immigrant neighbor? And how do we do things in the legal fashion that has been set forth through the government that God has set up to protect us? So, I mean, it's you know, two sides of that coin.
Yeah, and the point I would make about that is it's not an easy decision to where to draw the line on that. We've talked about this refugee crisis in Syria, and of course a lot of people are very upset with Trump's decision related to that. And I'm not really going to come on here and defend him in that. I'm not sure how I feel about this travel restriction. For one thing, it was rolled out very crudely done. They missed some pretty important details. But on the other hand, is bringing those refugees thousands of miles away from their home that they'd like to return to, if peace can be, you know, the unrest can be settled in their homeland. Most people want to live back in their home. They don't want to move thousands of miles away. So my question on that would be more, is that the best solution, bringing them here? Not that it's a good, I mean, it's a Christian thing to do to help these people out, but is the best way to help them to bring them thousands of miles to our country? I mean, sure, a lot of them probably would like to come to America, but unfortunately, the terrorists also have told us we're going to mix ourselves in with those refugees. I mean, they told us that. We're not assuming that, and I think we should take them at face value on that and be very, very careful with this. But again, I'm not necessarily in a position to say we need to block all the refugees or immigrants for that matter either. So I think the hardest part about this is where the line needs to be mm-hmm. between compassion and not letting your compassion for the immigrant or the refugee override your compassion for your own citizens. So I think my guess would be God wants us to fall in the middle somewhere, but I don't know where that middle is.
And one thing that came to mind, and I don't really know the answer, I don't know if there's a system in place or a mechanism in place to house or to take care of refugees when they get here. I mean, to just take them to the shore and dump them off and say, you're in America, good luck. I mean, that's not doing a service either. Are there programs or systems in place to somehow? I mean, my perspective when someone says, well, wouldn't it be the Christian thing to do to take in these refugees? I'd say, yeah, do you have a guest room at your house? And because we're fine saying, yeah, we as a country should do it, but I myself will not be affected by this in my daily life.
Well, and that's true for so many of us because clearly with the refugees coming in, they're taking them to certain places. They've prearranged with that locale that, yeah, you're getting so many of them. But yeah, how many of us that want them here are saying, yeah, I'll take them in. And most of us are doing, like you say, I don't have to worry about that. I can have a strong opinion about it because I don't have to worry about it. Now, you could say that the ones that are saying we don't want them in here, don't let them in. Well, that's the easy opinion. If they're not here, you don't have to have any guilt for not helping them. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, our country does a lousy job of taking care of our veterans.
Right.
So why are we bringing in more people with extreme needs when mm-hmm. we have people in the streets right here that we're not taking care of?
Who have fought in wars to keep us safe. And yeah.
And, you know, that would be more my question. And some people would say, well, we can do both.
Right.
Well, that's fine. But if we're going to do one, let's do both.
Right. Yeah. My driving point was that if we're going to do, quote, the Christian thing to help our neighbor who is a refugee, saying that, come on and the government will take care of you isn't actually Christian compassion. You know, if you're going to play the Christian compassion card, then that means it's going to cost you money as an individual. You know, you out of your monthly, you know, income are going to pay money. You're going to be inconvenienced. And if that's not actually happening, it's hard to say that, oh, this is our Christian compassion, because you're just passing the buck to, you know, the taxpayer at large, not really actually, being compassionate or merciful in of yourself. Tell you what, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to be back listening more sections from this Nancy Pelosi town hall. We'll be right back.
The phone lines are now open. Call toll-free 1-844-51-FAITH. That's 1-844-51-FAITH.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
When women go into Planned Parenthood for an abortion, the facility tells them up front, please do not bring your children with you. Every woman who goes in for an abortion brings a child with her in the womb, but the abortion giant is talking about the siblings of those preborn children, the brothers and sisters of the child sentenced to die. Why don't they want children present? Because it's bad for business. Women waiting for abortions are more apt to see these children and change their minds about aborting their own. On another Planned Parenthood note, the notorious traveling abortionist Nicola Moore lost her job. She was working for the Clinton Global Initiative, promoting her deadly craft, but funding dried up in the wake of Hillary's loss, and all lost their jobs.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
With the SRN News Business Brief, I'm Dennis Crowley. The Trump administration is revising recent U.S. sanctions that prevented American companies from exporting some electronic equipment to Russia. It is also modifying on Iran, expanding a list of medical equipment that needs federal authorization to be sold to Iranian customers. Facebook blew past Wall Street's expectations yet again with its quarterly earnings report, despite some concerns that its ad load or number of advertisements it can show users without clogging up their feed has reached its limit. Facebook is reporting fourth quarter earnings of $3.56 billion, up sharply from $1.56 billion in the same period a year earlier. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 6 points with business. I'm Dennis Crowley.
In today's Takedown Minute, C.S. Lewis calls attention to the objectification of women that inevitably results from violating the Sixth Commandment. In his book, The Four Loves, C.S. Lewis writes, "We use a most unfortunate idiom when we say of a lustful man prowling the streets that he wants a woman. Strictly speaking, a woman is just what he does not want. He wants a pleasure for which a woman happens to be the necessary piece of apparatus. How much he cares about the woman as such may be gauged by his attitude to her 5 minutes after fruition. One does not keep the carton after one has smoked the cigarette." Now, Eros makes a man really want not a woman, but one particular woman. In some mysterious but quite indisputable fashion, the lover desires the beloved herself, not the pleasure she can give. That was C.S. Lewis for today's Takedown Minute.
Welcome back to Once for All. We're talking about some of the news headlines, particularly Nancy Pelosi recently hosted a town hall meeting where we're trying to analyze some of the things that was said in that. And one of the aspects, one of the topics came up is the issue of abortion. Now, something that we, with just so much time on a show, it's hard to get in all the audio that we would like to cover. In the section before the one we'll play in a moment, there was a question about late-term abortion, and a woman told the story about how her child is not going to live until birth, and so she opted for late-term abortion. And then she lamented that her state didn't allow for late-term abortion, and except for the life of the mother. Well, since the life of the mother wasn't at risk here, then she couldn't abort her baby. And so Nancy Pelosi addressed this and saying, yep, see, this is why we got to get the states out of our decisions. That should only be between us, our husbands, and our God. So, is what she said. But then after that discourse, steps up this woman and she asks this question.
I am part of the pro-life generation. Mm-hmm. I believe that abortion is not the answer for unplanned pregnancy. My birth mother was faced with a decision that many women today are facing. Without the means of properly raising a child, she chose the most ethical decision and chose adoption. With her courageous and unselfish decision to make such an awesome decision, I now have the ability to thrive and succeed in life. Don't you think that everyone has the option or needs the ability to thrive and succeed in life.
I certainly do, and I love the word you used. You said, my mother chose. My mother chose, and we want other people to have that opportunity to choose as well. And when we do, my whole thing, when people ask me what are the three most important issues facing the Congress, I always say the same thing. Our children, our children, our children. Their health, their education, the economic security, their families, clean environments in which they can thrive, a world at peace in which they can succeed and reach their aspirations. But many of our friends who are so intent on when life begins in their view do not subscribe to that after the child is born to meet the needs of the children. So I hope you will join us in our quest to say that all of the children in our country, that one in five children in America lives in poverty, goes to sleep hungry at night in the greatest country that ever existed in the history of the world. And why? Because we haven't made the right decisions to lift all of those children up. And that's why I say to my colleagues, show me your values, show me your budget. What are you doing to lift these children up? So I hope that respecting your mother's to make her ability to make her choice, I hope you'll help us help all of these children to be able to thrive when their mothers make that choice to have them as well.
All right, Jeff, what do you think?
Well, it's a fairly typical politician's answer to a question. She didn't answer the question. They won't go anywhere near the word abortion. They call it women's health care, women's reproductive rights, women's reproductive care. Her first three words to that question were children, children, children. Well, if there's an abortion or a late-term abortion or any kind of abortion, there is no children, children, children. So, again, she avoided the question completely. They're so uncomfortable with the topic of abortion because they know in their hearts it's horrible. And they won't answer it. Are there people in the general population that will use the term and aren't uncomfortable with the graphic nature of it? Yeah, there probably are. But these politicians they know how people really feel. They know that the mainstream media does not represent the overall opinion of the country. And so she goes on and on about the children. She never once addressed abortion, never once addressed late-term abortion in the answers. So again, it's typical. She's a politician. I was watching another interview recently, and it completely unrelated, but it had Tucker Carlson, the host, was laughing all the way through the interview because he couldn't get the guy to answer one single question. And so it's typical, but in another way, because it's typical, it's sad. They don't take this issue seriously, and it doesn't matter where you fall on what side of the issue or somewhere in between. This is a serious issue that we just kind of almost push aside in the at least the government, from the government perspective.
Yeah, I saw this coming a mile away when the young lady was asking the question. I mean, she's a college student, and I commend her for being pro-life, and I commend her for having the confidence, the courage to ask Nancy Pelosi a question. How many college students get that opportunity? However, I saw it coming from a mile away, because what this young college student doesn't understand is that what defines life for those on the left is the will of the mother. So if your mom wants you to live, then it's a human life. But if your mom doesn't want you to live, then it's not a human life. So it all hinges upon, as Nancy Pelosi said in that clip, the choice we should be giving. So really, the college student who was one who was given an adoption, and she now can experience life because her mom decided to give her up for adoption rather than to abort her. The question that she should have asked Nancy Pelosi is, don't you think that I should have been killed rather than giving the life that I, because that's now another question. So at the end, when Nancy Pelosi said we should respect mothers to make this decision, what she's saying is that her mom, we should have respected her mom to kill her if that's what she wanted. So this is all couched in this language of, we need to be giving people choices. We have to remember, what's the choice that we're letting people make? The choice we're letting people make is we should let people make the choice to kill unborn babies, and we should be morally okay with that.
Well, and I would take it a step back, and they always avoid this when you talk about it. They had a choice. The choice was not to participate in an activity that would result in a pregnancy. And I, you know, this is a family show. I won't get graphic about that. But
thank you.
That was your choice. Your choice. You don't have a choice now, at least from a religious perspective, but I think from a human nature perspective, it excuse me, it saddens me that we are in a position in this country where so many people are so callous about this decision, quote unquote. The mother had a choice before that. And the way that I, at least from a political perspective or from a, you know, a secular perspective, I've been told on more than one occasion when I've gotten into conversations about abortion, and I try and avoid it because it doesn't usually go anywhere. But I've been told on more than one occasion, well, if you don't have female genitalia, you don't get a say in this. And my answer to them is two part. The first part is, okay, we're both, in this case, the one I'm thinking of, we're both men. I'm standing up for a defenseless unborn child that can't defend itself. You're standing up for the ability for your girlfriend to get you out of trouble because you got her and you into trouble. I think I have a little more standing here than you do. So please, as another man, don't tell me I don't have a say in this. Second of all, I absolutely have a say in it. That pregnancy, if that's my child, that's still my child. Yes, the woman carries it in her body, but that is part of me, and I do absolutely have a say in that. And they tend to avoid that because, you know, we all know women's rights are much more important than other people's rights, except maybe minority groups. But, mm-hmm. you know, again, that's another issue for another day. But well, and they just don't really have an answer for either one of those things.
Nancy Pelosi said in the previous clip, on the late term abortion clip that we did not play, that she said, look, everyone, I don't know if she said Republicans or conservatives or whatever she said, they're all about stopping abortions. She didn't say that word, but as soon as the child's born, they have nothing to offer that child. No help. We don't want to give any money to help the child anymore. And my response to that would be, actually, we're promoting a structure to help children, and it's called family. The problem is it's being destroyed by the sexual revolutionists. So that we've said, look, that the mechanism that God has placed into our society to provide for and to protect children is a family, like a mom and a dad. And the problem is that what is being done in our political sphere is that it's being ruined by those who are saying marriage is not something that is a man and a woman, a husband and a wife. It can be interchangeable parts, and nothing wrong with that. That a child doesn't deserve a mom and a dad. It's okay for a child to have two moms or two dads. That mom and dad doesn't bring something unique to the table of raising a child. So see the thought is, if we're going to support children born in an unplanned way, then it must come from the government. Like there isn't another way that support can come if not from the government in the minds of the left. And however, look, families have been supporting children for years, and mom and dad has been a better provider for child than government for many, many, many years.
Well, and it's a funny thing, and obviously it's probably a purposeful thing, that we did a pretty good job of taking care of people before we kicked religion out of every aspect of American life. You know, and I'll admit I'm not a huge fan of the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church did an amazing job of having programs to take care of people and not relying on the government to do it. And, you know, I grew up I grew up in the Mormon church. The Mormon church does an excellent job of taking care of its own people. They don't, I don't think they do a lot outside of their own membership, but their welfare program within the Mormon church is fabulous. But the church has been kicked out of so many places in our society now. We have no choice but to have the government do it, which, of course, was their plan.
Right.
And I would just quickly go back to, you know, you mentioned her being asked the question on the partial birth abortion issue. And the only thing I would say about that is part of her answer. Well, I'll just read a quick quote right here from her answer on that. The issue of late-term abortion is one that has been used by the far right to fight a woman's right to choose because it sounds like something that shouldn't happen. Sounds like something that shouldn't happen. Really? That's your defense to this? You're going to throw up the word choice again and say that late-term abortion is something that shouldn't happen? It's disgusting. I'm not, you know, if you go back to the earlier part of a pregnancy, I can get how some people want to make the argument the child's not viable. Okay, I don't like it, but I can get where they can get to that argument. But how can you even defend the late-term abortion? It's a disgusting, horrible process.
Well, right. And so I think in the arrangement of this town hall meeting, they wanted to find someone who has a story. Come on. Someone come forward with a story that we can appeal to the emotional side of this issue, late-term abortion. And they found a lawyer who said, look, I had to have a late-term abortion because the child wasn't going to live anyway. And I just kind of stopped to think about that a little bit. So because your unborn child wasn't going to live, you thought you should kill it?
I would have a problem with that. And part of the reason I have a problem with that is a personal experience of my... I don't want to share too much because I don't have permission to use the story. But someone that I know very well that was told that their stillborn child wasn't going to go to heaven because it was her fault. And that was a traumatic experience for her religiously, which shaped her religious life. But I don't think there was ever a moment where she would have considered ending the life of that child. We don't know what's going to happen when that child comes in the world. You know, they talk about viability all the time. And every time that they think they can draw the line somewhere, another miracle happens of a premature baby that was born even earlier than the last one and survives and thrives. So I think you talked about once when we discussed this once before about the trot out the tot, you know, analogy. We don't get to decide. And that's where I would go back to. You had a choice before you conceived that child.
So basically what that is it's the euthanasia argument that we'll probably be talking about here in the next segment, only it is in the womb.
Exactly.
So the argument that has been laid before us, at least in the town hall meeting, is that the reason we should be okay with late term abortion is because there are instances in which unborn baby in the womb, is determined medically that it will not live. It is about to die. And that is a tragic thing. And certainly in the course of this conversation, don't want to sound insensitive to the difficulty that anyone who would go through that would have. However, then opting to end that child's life earlier than what it would naturally experience death does not really solve any issues. Does not solve any problems. Now, from a Christian perspective, we do say where a pregnancy could endanger the life of a mother, then it's a tragic situation, but there an abortion might be an option again. But there it's because life is at stake. So we're not demeaning the sanctity of life. We're actually upholding the sanctity of life to say the life of the mother is important. That's really the only exception that I can think of biblically and really as I want in a society.
Yeah, and a lot of people want the exception for rape, and I can completely understand that. And I'm not sure where I stand on that. I mean, from a religious perspective, I think I think similarly to you, but I think I have a bit of a caveat in my mind that, you know, that's a possible exception, but I'm so uncomfortable with the whole process that I'm not even sure I want to go there. And then the health of the mother thing gets overused in the argument for abortion because, as Ben Carson pointed out, it's so rare with our technology today and our medical technologies that the health of the mother is a choice between the baby and the mother. And excuse me, a little too early in the morning for me. I'm not a professional to make that. You know, to make that estimation, I would have to leave that up to the doctors, and I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Let's take one more break, and then we get back. We're going to be talking about Nancy Pelosi's take on the Donald Trump's Supreme Court nomination. That right after this on Once for All.
The phone lines are now open. Call toll-free 1-844-51-FAITH. That's 1-844-51-FAITH.
Now it's time for Table Talk Extras with Pastor Brian Wolfmuller.
Perhaps the single biggest idol in America in modern times is the God who's simply a nice guy. You know what I'm talking about. The God who doesn't offend anyone, the God who doesn't meddle in people's lives. It's kind of like Goldilocks. Not too hot, not too cold, not too hard, not too soft, but right in the middle. So a God who's not angry, who's not jealous, who's not loving, a God who's just nice, who will let me into heaven because I work hard at good. A God who will defend me from my enemies, but won't do anything whenever I sin. A God who's holy but doesn't really care too much about it. That's the idol of our day. But it's not the God of the Scriptures. G.K. Chesterton, the Catholic apologist, said that one of the things about Christianity is it has both extremes. It has love and wrath both burning. If he was Lutheran, he would have said Christianity has law and gospel in their extremes. The law in its harshness, God's wrath at its fiercest, his anger at its hottest, and God's love at its sweetest, his gospel at its most precious, full octane comfort. The fact that God loves us so much that he didn't hold back his only son, but gave him unto death and wrath and sin and grave for us. Now that's the God of the Scriptures. That's the God of love. That's the God who saves us and gives us eternal life. He's not nice. God is love.
This has been a production of Table Talk Radio. For more information, visit tabletalkradio.org.
This is Sacred Meditations. O God of all the nations of the earth, remember the multitudes who have been created in your image, but have not known the redeeming work of our Savior, Jesus Christ. And grant that by the prayers and labors of your holy church, they may be brought to know and worship you as you have been revealed in your Son, who lives and reigns with you and the Holy Spirit, one God, forever and ever. Amen. For more prayers and meditations on God's Word, check out sacredmeditations.org.
I respect, too, the fact that in our legal order, it is for Congress and not the courts to write new laws. It is the role of judges to apply, not alter, the work of the people's representatives. A judge who likes every outcome he reaches is very likely a bad judge, stretching for results he prefers rather than those the law demands.
Those are the words of Neil Gorsuch, the nomination for the Supreme Court to replace Scalia as released this last week, and his words on his perspectives of what is the duty of a Supreme Court justice. You're listening to Once for All. And just one more segment for your phone calls. That number is toll free, 1-844-51-FAITH. No matter where you're listening, 1-844-51-FAITH. And those listening in Oregon, anyone who calls in with a comment or question gets two free tickets to the movie Martin Luther, The Idea That Changed the World, playing in Grants Pass on March 16th. So the topic before us is Trump's pick for Supreme Court justice. And when asked in the town hall meeting, Nancy Pelosi had this to say about Neil Gorsuch.
And all of if you breathe air, drink water, eat food, take medicine, or in any other way interact with the courts, this is a very bad decision, well outside the mainstream of American legal thought, not committed to Supreme Court precedents.
All right, Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure what she just said there. I'm going to read that statement really quickly again here. If you breathe air, drink water, eat food, take medicine, or in any other way interact with the courts... I'm not even sure how those two things connect.
Well, let me interpret that for you.
Yeah.
If you do anything that involves living, then the courts need to be there to tell you how you'll do that and whether you're doing it in a right way or a wrong way.
Okay, so I better get my constitution back out because I apparently missed that part. But anyhow, it's not surprising that the, you know, the left is going to throw up every roadblock, no matter who they nominate. That's just a foregone conclusion. They've basically told us that they're going to do it. And I would expect that they should be overly, you know, tough on them. But maybe they should take the example of the Congress of the last 8 years. Obama really didn't get much pushback on his appointees, except obviously the last one that they just refused to have a hearing for because they don't want the court so drastically pushed to the other side, which is exactly what would happen with a more conservative, a more textualist jurist. It'll be right back to where it was, where basically Anthony Kennedy is the deciding vote about 90% of the time. And you know, he's much more liberal on social issues and much more conservative on more constitutional based issues. So they're going to push back pretty hard. It doesn't surprise me what she said. And that kind of goes back to what I said before. Listening to Nancy Pelosi sometimes is like being waterboarded. You just don't know where she's coming from. So her statements on that are somewhat meaningless because she really didn't even really say anything. I mean, they always say outside the mainstream, they must use the media as their measuring stick for mainstream.
Right.
Because Donald Trump was elected despite the fact that he was apparently also running for governor of California and getting those extra couple million votes in California. He was elected because most people are rejecting the mainstream, or at least her definition of the mainstream. So he's actually, and I did a lot of research on him. I think he's an excellent pick, and I think he's a good balance of, I don't think he's as forceful of a judge, at least from what I can read on him, as somebody like Clarence Thomas. But I definitely think that, to use the phrase that the person he's replacing kind of coined, he's a textualist. And that's what I think is important, is that he sticks to the letter of the law.
Right. I wanted to, of course, our listeners know that our show originates from Oregon. And I wanted to read this from Senator Ron Wyden, representative from Oregon. He says, "The Gorsuch nomination represents a breathtaking retreat from the notion that Americans have a fundamental right to constitutional liberties and harkens back to the days when politicians restricted the people's rights on a whim," Wyden said. "His opposition to legal death with dignity as successfully practiced in Oregon is couched in the sort of jurisprudence that justified the horrific opposition of one group after another in our first two centuries. No senator who believes that individual rights are reserved to the people and not the government can support this nomination. A lot of irony in that regard. Of course, Gorsuch is a advocate for life. He even wrote a book on the sanctity of life. So I can see why Senator Ron Wyden would not be jazzed about this nomination. However, I think this is such a tremendous irony that we're saying that there's a legal right to death, but on the other hand, there's not a legal right to life. I mean, this is so backwards that we can't get it straight.
Well, and two things I picked up in that is apparently a lot of us have a different definition of a couple of words that he used in there. One of them would be liberty. At the end of that statement, he's tying liberty to the government. Liberty is not tied to the government. Liberty is defended by the Constitution from the government. The government was created with the firewall that they cannot infringe on our liberties. And
because they were endowed by your creator.
Exactly. Yeah. And they don't give us those liberties. We have them inherently. The Constitution was supposed to protect us from the government that it was creating. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was, as he said, the success of the death with dignity law in Oregon. What is his definition of success?
Right.
Because we have right to die tourists that come here to kill themselves. That's not a success to me. People that choose our state because it's legal for them to commit suicide, regardless of how much they may be suffering or how terminal their condition is. I don't call it a success that we have become a tourist destination for suicidal people. I'm not demeaning the people that may have to make that choice, although I don't think of it as a choice, but they do. So I'm not demeaning them. I just don't see it as a success that we are the beacon of suicide.
there was a survey not too long ago asking the reasons why those who are opting for physician-assisted suicide why are you doing so? And of course, what you think is that, well, the suffering is so terrible that I just want to end this. And that didn't even make the list. The number two reason why people opted for physician-assisted suicide was because they didn't want to be a burden upon their family members. Now, just think about that for a second. If your family member said, I want to kill myself because I don't want to be a burden to my family, that should strike at your core and say, no, I want to be burdened to care for you in your last moments. That's what I want to do as your family member. The number one reason why people opted for physician-assisted suicide is because that they wanted to be in control of when they die over against the cancer or disease that they have. That there seems to be some kind of a defeat in saying that I lost the fight to cancer or whatever. But by saying, I am choosing when this ends, it's not cancer is taking me, it's me who's taking me. And it's really an argument of autonomy that I want to be a God and be the one who determines when I will end. And neither of those reasons are reasons that we should say, yeah, I think that you should be given the ability to choose when you die because it's up to you. I'll give you the last word, Jeff. We have just over a minute left.
Well, and I would say related to that is going back to what we talked about before. We've surrendered so many of these decisions and these issues over to the government. I would look to a country like the Japanese. They do a tremendous job of taking care of their elderly. Why? Because the family takes care of them. The family, they hold them up in the highest esteem, and they have great sacrifices in order to take care of their elderly family members. We don't do that here as much as we probably have in the past, or indefinitely not as much as we should. The family should be there for these people, not the government. But unfortunately, we've gotten to the point where the government has become more and more a big part of our lives, and that's, I think, is a problem, and it's not going to be solved by government. You don't solve where government fails you, you don't solve it with more government. And I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. This has been fun.
And thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Once for All. What do you think? Give me a call. Leave a message, 1-844-51-FAITH. You can leave a message and tell me what you think. We'll talk to you again next week. You've been listening to Once for All.
This has been Once for All. You can contact the show by sending an email, deliveredonceforall@gmail.com. You can listen again to this show or any other episodes by visiting onceforallradio.com. Until next time, stand firm in the faith, once delivered to the saints.